The problem is that sometimes it's not exactly that the decision is made in an automatic way by the artificial intelligence, but that the humans are using it without actually being able to go into ways how these decisions are being made.
And obviously, having a solution, an artificial intelligence solution for that type of complex disputes that we handle is not yet here, but it may eventually come.
Chatbots, smart assistants, powerful algorithms, AI is everywhere, bringing with it opportunities and potential benefits, but also ethical and practical concerns. The law is crucial in addressing a technology that has the potential to outpace human development. This podcast examines issues of ethics, liability, and applications of AI to the legal profession, as well as the challenges of implementing regulatory frameworks around AI, something many prominent players in this area have been advocating for, such as Elon Musk, a co-founder of ChatGPT parent company OpenAI, here speaking at the World Government Summit 2023.
We have regulatory bodies that oversee the public safety of cars and planes and medicine. And we should have a similar sort of regulatory oversight for artificial intelligence, because it is, I think, actually a bigger risk to society than cars or planes or medicine.
Professor Lyra Yakulevichinye, Dean of the Faculty of Law at Mykolas Romeris University in Vilnius, discusses the use of AI in the court system.
Clearly, there is evidence that the use of artificial intelligence, the benefit is, of course, speed, efficiency, and maybe even in some cases, even more justice, because there are no certain factors that might negatively influence the decision makers. There are already some examples where, in a way, robotic judges operate. Since 2017, China has been hearing, I believe, around 3 million cases. They use AI in the courtroom, in the trade cases, in e-commerce, cases, litigations, liability cases, copyright cases. There has been an initiative in Estonia, in the Baltic states, to deal with minor cases related to monetary disputes. Now, even Estonia is very advanced technologically, is one of the most advanced countries in Europe. The Ministry of Justice and the government sort of backed up and withdrew this proposal, because apparently there was a lot of criticism. So they just said, well, these are just some tools that the courts are going to use in an auxiliary way. So it will be just helpers, but not decision makers. And if we look at the regulation and what should be in the regulation, I think there is a clear tendency that we are going to auxiliary rate role of artificial intelligence and not as decision making, automated decision making. Now, the question is whether it's already regulated or not, because a lot is already regulated. But the problem that there are certain gaps, we all know that automated decision making is prohibited by the data protection rules, at least in the European Union. But the problem is that sometimes it's not exactly that the decision is made in an automatic way by the artificial intelligence, but that the humans are using it without actually being able to go into ways how these decisions are being made. And then the question is, how can you appeal the decision if you cannot explain? So this is one of the issues that I think has a difficulty vis-a-vis Article 6 of the European Convention of Human Rights, which requires transparency.
Diego Muñoz Tamayo, a founding partner of Muñoz Tamayo and Asociados in Bogota, assesses the role of AI in disputes and in enabling greater access to justice.
But the fact is that access to justice is a privilege that is only available to a small minority of humankind. That is to say, most humans do not have real, effective, efficient access to justice. And when I say access to justice, it's solving everyday minor problems, not these complex litigations that run or end up in our desks. And obviously, having a solution, an artificial intelligence solution for that type of complex disputes that we handle is not yet here, but it may eventually come. We're saying this is a process, it's a learning process, and it's something that will end up happening. And to the extent that these mechanisms are being sophisticated, that they are capable of reaching out to far more sources, to the extent that they may be able to get the input from cross-pollinization from different jurisdictions, this is a process that will be evolving. However, I think that there's also room for small causes for everyday disputes of, I don't know, rent thing or neighbor disputes or traffic infractions, whatever, where this type of mechanisms can start being used. And obviously, that is a manner in which they start learning dispute resolution, the platforms, the mechanisms start being educated for that purpose. They obviously, we run into the controversy that they say, well, there's lack of transparency and there are biases in the form artificial intelligence may operate. Well, of course, we have no clue how these algorithms are conceived and operate and what are the sequences. But at the end, the question is, do we have that information for those algorithms of certain people called judges and it's in their head? I think we're just as lost. And we have no clue what the rationing may be. And obviously, we do not have any clues as to the biases, the cognitive biases. Obviously, we may say that there will be biases and it will be the biases of the programmers, whatever. But eventually, that will be also balanced and leveled.
Ricardo Cajola, an officer of the IBA Bar Issues Commission and managing partner at Cajola and Associati in Milan, is the editor of an IBA guide on the use of AI as a professional tool. He outlines a number of issues facing lawyers using AI.
One of the main issues is the problem of built-in or implicit bias of lack of transparency in the algorithms, for example. And so here, more systematic legal ways of auditing algorithms are definitely needed. So it should be based on what we call ethical algorithm design, which begins with a precise understanding of what kinds of behaviors we want the algorithms to avoid, so that we know what to audit for and proceed to design and deploy algorithms that avoid these behaviors. Another issue, briefly, is that there is no independent analysis about the efficacy of any given AI solution, so that neither lawyers nor clients can easily determine which of the several products, services, which are currently on the market achieve the results they promise. And besides the ethical duty of competence in selecting these AI systems, there are also issues of legal liability in connection, of course, with the use of AI tools. So there are too many liability issues here to me. Well, first, to what extent are lawyers liable when and how they use or fail to use this AI to address client needs? And one example is whether a lawyer or law firm will be liable, for example, for malpractice if the judge in a matter accesses software identifying governing guiding principle or precedents that the lawyer failed to use or find through the AI system. Well, of course, liability should attach if the consequence of the lawyer's failure to use an AI tools means bad outcome for the client results. That's for sure. But more complex are questions like the apportionment of liability if the software is defective.
Simply defining AI can be challenging. Here, Professor Christian Duve, a tech-focused lawyer based in Frankfurt, discusses the approach taken by the proposed EU law on artificial intelligence.
They had to answer the question, what is artificial intelligence? And I think they just said, for the purpose of this regulation, artificial intelligence system means software that is developed with one or more of the techniques and approaches listed in Annex 1. In other words, they said we don't want to define it because we know it will continue to evolve further. They supplemented this phrase by saying it has to apply for a given set of human-defined objectives, not by the AI, by the software itself, generate outputs such as content, predictions, recommendations, or decisions influencing the environments they interact with. That's the way they narrow the scope of the software. And it lists machine learning approaches, including supervised, unsupervised, and reinforcement learning, using a wide variety of methods, including deep learning, logic and knowledge-based approaches, including knowledge representation, inductive programming, interference and deductive engines, symbolic reasoning, expert systems, statistical approaches, Bayesian estimation, search and optimization methods. And this definition, as well as the reference to this Annex 1, the center of the debate between European Commission and European Parliament, and now also member states, because many believe this is by far too wide, because it covers almost every kind of software. But I think the basic approach to say, you know, let's find something that is flexible and that we can update from time to time makes sense to me.